Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A couple of weeks ago, my sister Sherry said to me, "I reckon my friend Lynn would be a great nitty gritty." She said she's in a wheelchair and she's really prepared to tell you the incredible story of how she ended up there. Well, I've heard the story now, and quite simply, I dare you to hear it and not feel like a complete wimp by the time it's over. The thing about Lynn, though, is that she's obviously been a total badass since the day she was born. This is the Nitty Gritty Committee, stories about the guts and the glory of life, and it doesn't get much gutsier than this one. I know I've said that before, but this one is profound. I think you are genuinely going to find this life-changing. So let's start off by hearing a bit about Lynn's life before she lost the use of her legs.
It was a very busy life. So I was a high school teacher. At the time of injury, I was the timetabler, daily organiser. About 3 years prior, I was a member of St John Ambulance Australia and had been since I was a child, and got up to the point of I was the head of cadets for Australia. And one morning, it was about 3 a.m, I woke up, I said, "I can't do this anymore." And I rang up that afternoon and said, "Sorry, I'm resigning," at the end of a 3-year term.
Wow. This was at the school?
This was the St John, so that was a volunteer role.
Yeah.
But that plus a full teaching load plus timetabler, and the daily org was the hard part. So that's where people would ring up and say, "I'm not going to be in tomorrow," and then I would have to find the people to replace them. Yeah. So that was either employ people for the day or other staff members would have to take that class. I was married, had been married for over 20 years, really happily, great guy, and widowed in the accident. That's probably the hardest bit. Yeah, so the chair and what goes with the chair, pain in the neck, takes a lot of time. I actually think it's a bit like getting old. Everything takes longer than it used to. Mm-hmm. You ache a lot more than you used to. People don't let you do things anymore. Mm-hmm. People don't let me open the door for them. You know, what I would have considered good manners, I'm not allowed to do. I have to be the person receiving it now. And that's how I see older people. That's how I view older people and how we treat them.
So can you talk about the accident? Is it like triggering and painful to talk about?
No. And again, that surprises me a great deal. So I was asleep at the time. I'm assuming I woke up. So when the police here, their road traffic guys went over to assess the scene, and unlike here where the roads would be closed off and the car impounded and a whole pile of things happen, the bus that I was in was back with its owners that night.
Yeah. So where did this happen?
Egypt. So we're on a day trip.
Okay.
And we'd gone from Cairo to Al Alamein.
So you're on holiday? You're living there?
No, on holiday. So this is school holidays. My husband was made aware of it through the police association and the letter. They put a newsletter out. And so it had been on our minds for some time. My husband had the belief that we should travel Australia first. We should know Australia. He didn't want to go overseas.
Yeah.
So we had travelled Australia. We'd done that a couple of times. And so this was our first international trip. I believe, I was told later, that we were discussing it, and he told one of my relatives that the look in my eye was, we're going. So I don't recall that, and I think I'd prefer to forget. We went. We didn't know anybody else on the trip. So we'd gone from El Alamein to Alexandria. We're on our way back from Alexandria. We're about 30 k's from our destination. And the belief is that we'd gone around a slight bend. The guy had had a sleep. Fell asleep.
The driver.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me. Woke up and was starting to fishtail, and he overcorrected and he fishtailed the other way and then overcorrected and overcorrected. And my understanding is that we swung all the way around. We hit a light pole, which in the desert in Cairo means a pole sticking out of a block of concrete that's a metre by a metre by a metre.
Okay.
So it's not like hitting one of ours because it had no other way of support, I'm guessing.
So ours tend to bend.
Yes.
And theirs don't.
No. From what I can guess,
okay.
That impact has impacted where my husband and the guy behind him were sitting, and that both of them have been killed instantly.
Oh, my God. So he was in the window seat, was he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so then from there, I believe we then hit a palm tree, which has killed another group at the back of the bus. And then that's caused us to flip up into the air. So there's actually two buses, and a group of people that were on the other bus that are now I'm now really good friends with, that I'd only met that morning. They were on the other bus, and they described people being flung out all over the place. And so the buses landed, and it appears, again, I don't remember any of this. They tell me I was conscious. Don't remember. I was trapped by my left leg, and that was stuck under the bus, and the rest of me was out. I must have been speared into the ground. The woman who finds me describes just seeing a hand scratching. I was scratching the sand away from my face. And so she stopped, and she dug me out. Now, like I was saying before, I got a lot of experience in terms of first aid.
Yeah.
I taught at an outer western suburban school, pretty tough cookie.
Mm-hmm.
She told me that she said that she'd go to look up after other people, and I asked her to stay. And I think that if I did that, I was absolutely shitting myself, because that doesn't – normally I'd go, I'm fine. I'm fine, go and look after someone else. So she stayed. She describes diesel leaking from the vehicle, and so to prevent that diesel from hitting me in the face, she was on all fours over me, allowing the diesel to hit her back and run off. At some point, the roof of the bus fell off. So bus is like a coach, luxury coach that you'd see here in Melbourne. Wasn't made to the exacting standards. So the tack welds that they put on to put the roof on, which for here would normally be then fully welded, it was only the tacks. And so the bus is on its side, and then the roof's fallen off. And the roof, the air conditioning unit on the roof struck the woman that was on me, stuck her femur up into through her pelvis and into her abdomen.
This is the lady that's helping you.
Yeah.
So as she's helping you, that's fallen on her.
Yeah. At some point, yeah. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't
not
know.
In the accident. This is subsequent.
Yeah. So she was on the other bus. She's come off the other bus. She should have been on our bus, but just for the day, they went on the other one because not everyone was going. And so they were the first women out, basically. They were all police women from the Northern Territory.
Oh, wow.
You know, have come across this type of thing before.
Which one's your femur, by the way? That's your thigh bone?
Thigh bone.
Has snapped and gone up through her
pelvis. I don't know that it's snapped.
Oh, it just moved up there.
Well, it might, actually, you're right. It must have snapped off at the
somewhere.
top yeah. near her hip, and has been pushed up into her abdomen.
Wow.
Yeah, so I vaguely recall get me out of here. I do have a couple of snapshots. I've got a snapshot of being in the air above the seats. I've got a snapshot of laying there and I can see the shattered windscreen. Mm-hmm. I've got a snapshot of yelling, my back, and I find out later that because I was trapped, I was trapped for a couple of hours. I believe it was a festive occasion in Egypt. And so that night they had 46 major traffic accidents and then the bus accident on top of that. And so it had taken a couple of hours for the rescue guys to get there, you know, get the jaws of life to be able to lift the bus because I was trapped by my foot. And I believe they tried to lift the bus to then pull me out, at which point I screamed about the pain in my back. I get told later things like a guy from Queensland that we had a reunion, everyone got together afterwards, and the guy from Queensland came up and asked if I remembered him. Absolutely no idea. Says that he sat next to me while we were waiting, and his wife was had been told to get back onto the other bus. And he says our conversation went something like, "Where am I?" And he'd say, "You're in Egypt." I'd go, "Egypt? How'd I get to Egypt?" And he'd explain the story. I'd go, "Oh, okay then." And then a few minutes later I'd go, "Where am I?"
Oh, wow.
He'd say, "Egypt." Poor guy. So fortunately I have a very black sense of humour and find it really humorous. The other two police officers from the Northern Territory, they were instrumental in getting the Australian Embassy involved. So one of them contacted one of their mates who was currently in Alice Springs by phone for that person to ring the Australian Embassy to then get the Australian Embassy in Australia to activate the Australian Embassy in Egypt, if that makes sense. While we're at the accident scene. Incredibly clear thinking. And she would, she describes coming up and saying, "Oh, they're going to be in another 20 minutes later." And she was surprised at how calm I was because I would just go, "Oh, yeah, okay. There's nothing you can do about it."
Mm-hmm.
I remember another thing that really got me was this group that I was talking to, we got together. And so they being police association, let's just call it, say, Victoria Police, a part of Victoria Police, had organised some of their councillors. And so we're in this big group and he was trying to demonstrate how he thought the accident had occurred, and then went around the room and there was all these people going, "My life flashed in front of my eyes. I thought I was going to die." And we just went around the room, person after person, "I was going to die, I was going to go." And what do I remember? I remember saying, "Fuck, life's going to be a lot different from now on." I don't ever remember having that thought of dying, which, again, really struck me. Mm. And I think the way you react to a life event like this partly is based on how you treated your life beforehand,
yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think part of my journey's been made easier because of that pragmatism and in the acknowledgement. I was a biology teacher, so I understood that death is part of life. And then I'd also experienced, you know, my grandparents dying, and I had experienced great aunts and uncles dying, and I don't know if I ever thanked my mother, but thanks, Mum. As a child, she would take us to the funerals of great aunts and uncles and other such people and explain to us the rituals. She would take us to the graveside and, "Would you like to go and have a look? Do you want, you know, come with me, I'll show you." And realising that it was just a hole in the ground. So then got to the point, one of my grandmother's funerals, she was born in Harcourt and she was the service was down in Melbourne, but then we travelled to Harcourt and she was buried at the cemetery there, and it was raining that day, and it had rained all the way up there. And so when we get to the graveside, which is situated on a hill, here's this river running through the bottom of the grave.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so from there we could turn around and look up on the opposing hill, and my aunts were saying, oh, that's where your grandmother grew up. So we used the time between the river stopping in the grave to when we could actually conduct the service, and we went up and we asked the current owner if it would be okay if we could have a look through this minute place, this tiny, tiny place where, you know, 9+ children were there. And just that it made me think that my home that I grew up in, which was, again, tiny compared to today's standards, just how luxurious it was. And we've got off the track.
No, we haven't. No, not at all. We're just floating. Because, no, all of this is like goes to, you know, the person that you are and the person that you were when you were trapped under a bus in Egypt.
And I don't like the word "were." I don't like people using the word, you know, it's the person I was.
Right, okay.
No, it's the person I am. The number of people who have stopped in their day to say, do I need a hand? And usually, no, pretty much always, I will say, no thanks, I'm right, done it 1,000 times.
Yeah.
Sometimes on the inside you want to say, well, how do you think I got it off in the first place? You know, how do you think
I got here?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but then just because you can do it, I suppose, doesn't mean people think they might just do you a favour and help you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know? So, and there has been one in the very early days. I've headed down to go to, I went to a podiatry appointment, never been there before. So I found, I don't like the word disabled car park either, but that's a different issue. But I found a car park that's wider than normal that would allow me to get my wheelchair down. But what I didn't realise was it was next to a tree, which had between the trunk and the asphalt was some gravel. Fine getting out. I came back to get in, miscued it. And so here I am, I've got one hand on the seat of my car, I've got the other hand on my wheelchair, and I am slowly pushing my wheelchair out and I'm supporting myself like a gymnast on the rings in the Christ position. And then this poor guy's worked past, so I've had to go, excuse me. That's certainly part where I have changed. That took me a while. I had to prove that I could do all the stuff that I did previously.
I bet.
And once I'd done that at least once, then for some of them I could let them go. When a young man asked if he could give me some help, either bringing my wheelchair down or up, I can't remember, he was genuine and he was kind and he was polite and he was cheerful. And eventually I had to say, I think that's where I learned, if you want to be in a kind of caring society, you've got to be kind of caring.
Okay.
So eventually I've just said, yep, that'd be lovely.
Oh.
And so he helped me with my chair. It took me 3 times as long as if I'd done it by myself, but he walked away with a smile on his face, and because of that, so did I.
Do you haven't mentioned yet when you first realised your husband wasn't sitting next to you and he wasn't?
I believe I asked and asked and asked and asked. Again, I don't remember any of this.
Uh-huh.
Where my memory really kicks in is waking in what I now know was ICU in Egypt. So we'd gone from a public hospital, which from accounts of other people was just totally overrun.
Yeah.
Because of that early intervention from the police women, we got moved to a military/private hospital, also in Cairo. They don't do nursing care like we do. So there's an expectation that your family will provide the nursing care, which didn't happen. This is another one of my favourite stories. So the two women in Darwin, their friend is the one who was rescuing me. She's from Alice Springs. So they've decided they're not continuing with the trip. They're staying with us. And they were organising a whole pile of things, plus taking care of people. So one of them is shortish, mm-hmm. and one is tall, and as Australians would say, built like a brick shit house.
Okay.
She's tall and solid, and turns out she's the softie. It took me a long time to work this out. She doesn't look it,
okay.
But she was the softie. And I remember her standing over me, and she was feeding me what must be breakfast, and it was like spaghetti and milk is how she describes it. Mm. And she had this little, you know, those plastic cups that are whitish and they've got that beveled edge all the way around, so just a plastic cup and with a spoon, and she's taking spoonfuls out of this cup and feeding me like a baby. And as she's doing that, she's going, "I wouldn't feed this shit to a dog."
Oh no!
Anyway, back to ICU. Yeah. I was in ICU. I notice what I now know as a nurse sitting on a seat outside the room, and in walk two men. One in a suit, who I'd guessed was from the embassy, and a priest because of the collar. And I said to them as they came in, "I guess you've come to tell me that my husband's not very well." And they said, "No." And I said, "Oh, so you're going to tell me that he's died?" And they said, "Yes."
Oh,
and I remember saying it wasn't hard to work out because I asked people and nobody would come back to tell me the answer.
Mm-hmm.
Don't recall asking that at all. Those same women in Darwin would say, so they were going between floors visiting the, you know, 26 odd people who were injured.
Wow.
And they were going between these and they would get to the staircase and they, you know, have their little conference and say, "So what are we going to tell her this time?" They could have told me anything because I don't remember.
Yeah.
I don't remember it at all. And then it was just resignation. It took me months to even get a tear up. Yeah, I was just totally blank. I've seen many psychologists in this journey, and they talk about being mindful and letting your mind go free of thought. Not a one. It was just blank as, and it was blank as for months and months and months. And thank God I have such a wonderful family,
mm-hmm.
Basically. So from there, a brother-in-law was in Boston working at the time. He was best mates with my husband. He just dropped everything and he was in Egypt in my room within 24 hours. And I think my parents... I don't have a good concept of time for that period of time.
Yeah.
My parents would have been there within the next 48 hours. My understanding is that they found out one day and they were on a plane the next. I did see another sister-in-law. She kept all of the clippings out of the newspaper because it was big news.
Yeah.
And it was January, so a whole pile of people on holiday. So it took up a number of pages for a number of days, weeks. And she collected them all, and I did take the time to read them. And there was a photo of my parents being interviewed by a news service. And the look on their faces, and I've gone, I can never do that to you again.
After the break, we'll hear about how the challenges in Lynn's pre-accident life helped her through the post-accident rebuild. You're listening to the Nitty Gritty Committee, Stories of the Guts and the Glory of Life. And shortly we'll find out from Lynn about the first time she was allowed to be alone in her own home after the accident. But first, she talks us through the initial aftermath in which she and her family had to make some very difficult decisions.
One.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Grandmother, at age 95, went into a nursing home, and she was there for 5 years before she passed away. Pretty much straight after that, my dad's mum went into a nursing home and was there for 10 years. She died in the September, and then I was injured in the January.
Wow.
Yeah, and that really struck me at how they'd just gone from carer to carer to carer, and just what a journey. And they do the little things. I lost a lot of weight, I believe, and the nurses told me one day that, you know, if I didn't put on some weight, they were going to sick the dietitians onto me. And I was really peeved because they didn't weigh me again before, next thing I know, I've got this dietitian at the door.
Yeah.
And I was getting fed those horrible sweet drinks. And so one of the things my mum did was she came into hospital every single day. And with her, she would bring lunch and a variety of things.
She's back here in Australia now?
Yeah, yes, yeah, okay. Do you want the time?
No, yeah, not necessarily. The time, I mean, how long were you in Egypt?
Egypt only about 4 or 5 days.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, very quick. Right. So I did have surgery there. That's another really interesting thing. I remember trying to read the signs. So as I was going, to the MRI machine and then from surgery, I do remember a black mask coming towards my face. And again, the thought was, fuck, this is serious. Mm-hmm. But I had back surgery there.
Wow, spinal surgery.
Yes. Yeah, I had a fracture dislocation. So they repaired that. Surgeons here, or the spinal consultants here, were very happy.
Great.
with that level of care. There was a triage team sent out by the travel insurance company. So there was a doctor, an intensive care nurse, a couple of paramedics, and between the four of them, they triaged how to get all these 26 people back home.
So within 4 days of the accident, you've had spinal surgery.
Yep.
And you're flying back to Melbourne.
No, flown to London.
Okay.
So I only had the spinal surgery. The leg that was trapped by the bus was degloved, I believe.
Oh, wow. That means the skin came off?
The full thickness.
The muscle?
And they exposed the muscle.
Okay, wow. All right.
All I ever saw was a bandage on my leg. So I was to be flown by air ambulance to London to have that looked at. It went from me going, or me with another person, to six of us going. So instead of leaving at 3 in the afternoon, we left at 3 in the morning. So we got flown over, and then I went directly to an emergency to predetermined hospital. So they were waiting for me. Another funny story. Registrar comes up and he's chatting to me and saying that they were going to go into surgery and have a look and maybe clean it up a bit. And if it was too bad, did they have consent to amputate? And I said, yes, one surgery is better than two. Then his boss has come up and the boss is going through all of this again and he's talking about, they were only going to go in for have a look and then they'll come out and then they would discuss options. And the younger doctor was nudging him, trying to say, I've already got consent for amputation if needed. But anyway, I believe that I went into surgery. Within 20 minutes, they came out and spoke to my parents and said, no, it was too badly injured. And so I lost the lower half of my left leg.
Okay.
Interestingly, it's actually given me more function. Had I kept it, I would have had to have a lot of surgeries, a lot of plastic surgery. It may then not have been any use to me.
Mm.
With the prosthetic, I'm able to put weight through that leg and it stays, whereas my other foot will slip out from underneath me. So it's actually been an advantage in being able to transfer from bed to the chair or the chair to the car.
So when did you learn that you wouldn't be able to walk again?
Never, ever recall that discussion.
Okay.
Never. In terms of a spinal injury, you get whatever function you're going to get back, they say, within 2 years.
Okay.
They say the sooner you get that function back, the better it will be.
Okay.
So I do have the ability to contract my quads, which are the top thigh muscles, but my hamstrings, which are the opposing ones at the bottom, are quite weak. I also, my glutes, my bum muscles don't work at all. So I did go through a period with a prosthetic in having a go at walking, and I spent several years with a local physio trying to get that to happen. I had special prosthetics made, so I needed full leg calipers. What's the name of the guy, the movie, Forrest Gump?
Yep.
Full of calipers, but state-of-the-art ones.
Yeah.
And they had a newly invented knee stance control joint. So if I did stand, my knees can – and when I say stand, I mean be upright but hanging on for grim death and taking all of my weight through my shoulders.
Right.
But my knees could give way at any time, so that prevented – that. So I gave it a shot for several years, maybe 3 years. I was in hospital receiving sometimes on the same day from the same person a bereavement card, a get well card, and a happy birthday card.
Wow.
And I had letters sent to me, and some would say things like, you may not remember me, but we were cadets together in St. John and I saw you in the newspaper. And I had one of the cadets. So as I went through the different roles in St. John, one role was to look after a group of divisions. And so one of the women out of those had created all of the bereavement notices out of the newspapers and made a little book out of them and then sent that to me. The kindness and thoughtfulness of people was just – we weren't able to have children and I decided that was – I'm not sure you can tell me the Buddhist Christians would say it was my cross to bear.
Oh, sure, yeah, we would say it's a karma.
Okay. Yeah. I met a man while having my wheels on my car changed one time, and he said in his culture it was everyone has their own mountain to climb. So I decided that that was mine. I now learn that was just a practice. I didn't do terribly well during that period of time. I became very insular. Yeah, so we tried for nearly a decade to have kids.
IVF, all that.
Yep. Yeah, and it's how I got a real empathy for the nurses, because you'd have to be so we lived out of suburban and you had to go from there into what's now Melbourne IVF in the city.
Mm-hmm.
You needed to be there by 7 a.m. so you could bear your ass to get an injection.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there I worked out of Western suburban.
Wow.
And I had to get out there to be ready for the first class.
Mm-hmm.
And so one day I remember driving out and it just struck me that those nurses were amazing.
Yeah.
You know, you'd cry, you'd get angry, they were just so calm, they just took it. And then one day it struck me that how do I know? Their kids might have been screaming all night. They may have been up all night. They might be in financial trouble. Their marriage might be falling apart. Their parents may be ill. You know, you just didn't know. So I remember trying to take that when I was in rehab.
Mm-hmm.
So in Melbourne, spinal injuries tend to get split up based on traumatically caused and non-traumatically caused. The majority of traumatically caused injuries go through Austin, which then rehabs at Royal Talbot, and the majority of non-traumatic go through Alfred and then to Caulfield General Medical Centre. So I ended up at the Royal Talbot, and it's a ward full of young men, because the majority of spinal injuries have traumatically caused ones.
Motorbike accidents, car accidents.
Diving accidents.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when I left, there was only one other woman left on the ward. And I remember taking the time to chat to the nurses to try and give them a bit of reprieve while they were in my room. So I was losing weight. Everyone under the sun gave me chocolates or hand cream, some of which I still have.
Yep.
Love chocolate. Had no appetite for it.
Yeah.
So I also, there's a little fridge in the room because you're there for so long. Mm. And I had soft drink in that to try and gain some weight. Now that didn't work either, and I didn't feel like having it. But I'd say, come in, sit down, tell me about your day. Some chocolate in that drawer, and there's some soft drink in the fridge. Help you. Do you know, not one of them ever did.
Yeah.
But they would sit down and chat. And I had really tough time at night getting to sleep. Really difficult. Mm. I experience some immense nerve pain, and I still have it. There's can probably count on one hand the number of times that I've woken up the following morning going, oh, I don't think I had any nerve pain as I fell asleep. Normally, as I fall asleep, I get this shot of nerve pain, and I'm assuming it's some little Pandora's box in the back of my mind there, just reminding me that, you know, it's not terribly safe to go to sleep because you don't know what's going to happen. And I want to face it. I want to remember what happened. I was conscious. That memory's got to be there, and I want to be able to face it and go, told you, I beat you. Look at, you know, I'm still here.
So how do you find positivity and joy and, you know, excitement about your future after you've been through such a traumatic experience? You've lost the love of your life, you've lost your mobility, the use of your legs. All your plans for the future.
All gone.
Evaporated in a moment.
Yeah.
How do you reconfigure and keep going?
You fake it until you make it, basically.
Okay. Yeah.
So I did have a mantra that I'd always smile at people, and I always smiled at people because then they would smile back. They might engage you in conversation, and that feels good. Terms of excitement, I don't think it exists. I really struggle. I really struggled, and I still do, making holiday plans. My husband's role within the police force, when we married, he deliberately took a job at office station. So he went into electronic speed measurement devices, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So he would test them, make sure they were certified, repair them as necessary, and go around Victoria teaching police how to use it. And if necessary, he'd be the expert witness in the court.
Mm-hmm.
And he did that deliberately because he'd seen so many marriages break up because of the rigours of police life, which meant he worked from 7 to 3. So he always left before I did, but was home an awful lot earlier than I did. So I had the incredible luxury, yes, live it up, ladies. Mm-hmm. I had a man that I rang home and said, I'm on my way home, and had dinner on the table waiting for me.
How lovely.
I know.
And you had your evenings together.
Yep.
Which is the upside, and there are upsides to not having children.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah,
your relationship was able to stay your main focus, and you had all that time together of an evening.
Absolutely. We also, between us, I think the number is currently 50 nieces, nephews, great nieces, great nephews, and I've had a lot of time to be able to do that. And the thing I love about young kids is they're not bashful.
No.
If they want to know a question, they just ask. I've had parents drag their kids away, and I try to say to them, no, it's okay. I'm okay with it. They can ask me anything they want. I usually try, if they ask me how it happened, I usually try to use words like vehicular accident because I don't want any kid, I don't want to say I was in a bus. I don't want a kid to say, to have the thought that that's what could happen if they went into a bus.
Do you remember the first time you were alone in a house, like when you stopped living with your sister and stuff and you just got your own place? Was it scary?
Oh, goodness. No, I don't remember the first time I was by myself. I certainly know that there have been days / nights where I have yelled this roof off and I have sworn like a trooper and cried and raged. And I still do that periodically, and I've decided that that's probably quite healthy. I can't change bed linen, for example. Not a lot of people realise that with spinal cord injury, the majority of people have incontinence issues. Mm-hmm. And so there have been times where I need my linen changed and it's not a day where it normally gets changed, yet I'm meant to be working.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been able to ring my twin sister and say, I've stripped my bed, and I can do that bit. I can strip it and I can get it into the machine. And I can get it out on the line, but I just can't get it back on to the bed. Well, not easily. And this is for another sister who believes that I should be able to do it by myself.
You've got a tough family.
Oh,
man.
They're tough.
Wow.
Yeah. Which has its good points.
Totally. That's where you come from.
That's where
sure.
I've come from. Wow. But I've been able to ring a sister who wasn't working on the day, who would take her granddaughter to school, jump on the train, change trains, get here, do my linen, probably put the sheets out onto the line, maybe even empty the dishwasher or put another load on, and then do the whole reverse in time to pick up her granddaughter from school again, and then I arrive home from work and it's done. And I've met people who don't have that. I've met people. There was a young man in the room next to me when I was in rehab, where I would have so many visitors that my mum and maybe a sibling would go in and have a chat to him and got to know him quite well because his family didn't take the time to visit. I think that's mainly why I'm so giving. Also, when I did the peer support and talking to people, often I at the early time, it's talking to their family. Because my experience, I was dealing with so much, I could only deal with one thing at a time. Yeah. So I'm talking before I went from Egypt to London. Wow. Had my leg amputated in London, and within a week I was on a flight back home to Melbourne, thank goodness, because school holidays, it had been a couple of weeks. Some of our nieces and nephews were quite young. I didn't want them to have to go back to school and have not had the funeral of their uncle. And so I'd made the decision that if I didn't get back, then it was to go ahead. That would have killed me.
Yeah.
It was bad enough. It doesn't hurt as much, but I don't feel that I had enough to do. You know, yeah. I saw that as my role, my right, however you'd like to take it, that's something that I should have been able to do for him. But I didn't.
I mean, you couldn't.
I couldn't. No.
It's not that you didn't.
I found out much later I was lucky to actually go.
Yeah.
It was a brother's a MICA paramedic. The only reason I was allowed to go to the discharged from hospital for the day, in effect, was my brother organised for one of his mates to drive an ambulance, and he came with me, and I had to have a spinal nurse with me, and one of the nurses, it was his day off, and he was just about to leave the unit, and he used his day off to spend with me so I could go to my husband's funeral. How do you thank someone for that? It would have killed me not to have been able to go. That would have been that would be, you know, sitting in a wheelchair, I can deal with that, but that's something you can't get back.
Thank you so much for downloading this episode of the Nitty Gritty Committee, and thank you to my sister Sherry, and of course to Lynn. Also, this beautiful music is traditional Tibetan music, and it's brought to us by my friend Tenzin Shuyul, and I will put his details on the liner notes to this podcast so that you can find more of his music. It's available on iTunes, and he also tours a lot as well, so you should get out and see Tenzin if you ever get the chance. If you know someone whose story would make a great Nitty Gritty, hit me up on Facebook and let me know about them. In the meantime, please take a few moments to recommend the podcast to your friends and to leave us a nice review on iTunes.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations?
Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.